Hey everyone, I'm Stephanie.
And I'm Jeremy.
Writers at RVFTA.com.
And the authors of The Idiot's Guide to RV Vacations.
About 10 years ago, we had a couple of babies and a marriage that was on the rocks.
So we bought an RV and we started camping. The rest, as they say, is history.
Join us as we talk about where to camp, what gear to bring, and the best food to cook.
We'll also keep you dialed in to the latest RV innovations from people in the know.
So pull up a chair and join us around the digital campfire.
This is the RV Atlas. We're back. Hello, everybody.
That sounded creepy. People just turned off their podcast.
We just lost thousands of people. Welcome to today's episode of the RV Atlas. I mean, we're settling back in after a really kind of wild, crazy, fun summer. We just got back a couple days ago from Glacier National Park, and we're going to do tons of content on Glacier National Park starting in October. But for September, we're back to doing just a mini episode each week, and then the official fall season will kick off right around October 1st. We'll be back 3 or 4 days a week, okay? So that's what we're looking at right now for the RV Atlas, is we're going to be coming at you 3 or 4 days a week. Stephanie, do you have an opinion on that?
So the summer season was the first time we switched from our hour-long weekly podcast in the campground of the week, and then kind of brought them all together in the RV Atlas and did multiple shorter episodes every week. And I really loved the new episode. The new episode format. It just freed us up to grab at a lot of topics, you know, that maybe didn't necessarily need a whole hour for us to discuss, but we could just say, hey, let's jump on a call with so-and-so for 20 minutes and talk with them about this topic. And I loved it. It kept it just fresh for me.
I loved it too. So like in the past, if something didn't feel like an hour-long episode, we might not have done it. And now we're like, we can do these shorter topics. The other thing I think we should tell our audience that it's really been great is our website is now really hyperactive with great content and material, because since we're doing 3 or 4 podcasts a week, with each podcast, we're doing a full blog post that goes along with that podcast. And to be quite frank with you, it's not just straight up show notes. Like sometimes the blog post has content that the podcast doesn't have and vice versa. So you're going to want to head over to rvfta.com too and check out the posts that go along with the shows. So let's do these mini episodes. And for the month of September, our weekly mini episode is sponsored exclusively by our friends at Yogi Bear's Jellystone Park Camp Resorts. And I love and adore our friends at Yogi Bear's Jellystone
Park Camp Resorts. Our whole family does. They are a big part of our family camping experience every single year. And we're going to talk a little bit later on in the show about the Halloween weekends that are coming up that you really need to get on if you have not experienced one of them.
You got to book now. And you should start thinking about booking now for next summer.
Now, it's not just a campground. It's a Jellystone Park. And you can go to jellystonepark.com to make a reservation at a Jellystone Park near you.
And just to review, everybody, we did 2 Jellystone visits this year already, and both were awesome. So, like, the Jellystone Mill Run outside of Pittsburgh, we loved.
New family favorite, yeah.
I wish it was a little bit closer, because it would be a go-to for weekends. And then also, we did Jellystone, Maryland for, like, 5 nights or 6 nights.
An old favorite.
And honestly, it's definitely like a top 10, maybe top 5 of all time favorite for our entire family.
Absolutely. Now, we are doing for the month of September for these mini episodes, we're kind of going to stay thematic. We thought it was a great time to hit the pause button on a lot of our great like lifestyle camping content and really turn to something that we get asked probably more frequently about than any other topic. And that's shopping for the quote unquote perfect RV, right? We are always, of course, getting questions about which RV people should buy, right? People message us, they post in our Facebook group, and we talk about this a lot at RV shows. So we do RV show seminars, and we actually give a seminar that's really about narrowing down, right, the type of RV that will be best for you.
This episode, we're talking about 5 questions that are going to help you find the perfect RV or close to the perfect RV. But But it's a series.
Yeah.
So for the month of September, we're going to kind of have a continuing series. So today we're going to ask you those five broad questions that you need to think about to get a really good RV. And by the way, Stephanie, why are we good people to talk to about this or to talk about this? Because we have screwed up and we have also occasionally bought the perfect RV for our family.
And we also hear everybody's stories, right? We just have so many war stories exactly that we hear about. So we're really just hundreds of examples, thousands of examples of people either getting the right RV or not getting the right RV.
So today's episode is going to be five questions to ask to find the perfect RV. Next week, we're going to talk about how to narrow down your floor plan. The week after that, we're going to talk about the purchasing process and get into the nitty-gritty about RV shopping, about spending money, about how to get a good price, about how to have realistic expectations about the purchasing process. And then the last episode in this series will be about picking up your first RV and getting a really good walkthrough and getting the right accessories that you need to get started.
Yeah, and you know, it's a topic that I hardly hear anybody ever talk about out there, but I think that it is crucial to embarking upon a great RV experience instead of maybe not having such a great initial new owner experience. You know, really knowing what to expect when you go to pick up your RV.
When we bought our first pop-up camper, we made a lot of mistakes, but we weren't tapping into any veterans or on any forums or getting information from people who'd kind of been there, done that.
It barely existed then.
Yeah,
we've
I know.
Come a long way.
I know. There were fewer resources.
Yeah. So For sure.
Let's dive into these five questions that you need to kind of ask yourself. And I really think this is going to help you make a smart purchase.
And before we say the first question, I want to make something very clear. We're talking about five questions to help you find the perfect RV. I'd like to really clarify that I don't believe there's any such thing as like your the rest of your life RV, right? I really think that there's a perfect RV for your family right now. And I think that our families change too much to really get an RV that's perfect for you long term. And people get caught up in a trap, I think. They're trying to find something that will suit them across many different stages of life, maybe, when you just need to kind of dive in and get the RV that's perfect for you right now.
I think it's really hard to anticipate how your family changes when you have kids that are growing up. And it whacks you over the head, and it happens really, really quickly, too.
Yeah, those kids whack you over the head for sure.
So I think that most RV owners are like, yeah, I'm going to have this RV for 10 years. Mm-hmm. And I think statistically, that's just really not true, and that most people do get something different after 3 years.
Yeah, and I think that that's something that we can get frustrated about, or we can just embrace, right, and make good choices, knowing that maybe this isn't a really long-term decision, and that's not necessarily a bad thing. But that's just my opinion.
Now, let's tie what we just said into the first question. So the first question you have to ask is, what is your price range? This is a profoundly important question, and some of you are out there like, duh. But I think I want to refine this and go a step further. Like, what is your price range? And then please stick to it, people. I think it's important. It's very easy for your price, the initial price range you set, to creep, because it's so easy to get RV loans for a lot of people. And all of a sudden you could, you know, your budget was $25,000, and all of a sudden you're looking at things that are $40,000. And some of you justify that thinking, well, I'm going to have the RV for 10 years.
Right.
But you probably won't. Mm-hmm. Like, you're probably going to trade it in 2 or 3 or 4 years. And if you blew your – if you busted your budget mm-hmm. on this first RV, you could be underwater when you go to buy the second RV. So I think it is important to really – you know, as much as possible, put as much cash down as you can and not get some crazy loan that takes you out of your budget.
Right. Because so here's the thing is, if you set a comfortable amount, what happens is you are going to be able to use your RV more. That's what we've learned from talking to so many other people out there, is that you have to remember, if you bust your budget on the RV, then you're not going to have as much money for traveling and for actually RVing. And we've learned that over the years, is that we want to be able to use RV as much as possible. So we kind of want to keep the RV expenses to a minimum.
And to give us a little bit of credit, we've kept we've taken out RV loans. I don't want anyone out there thinking we've been paying cash for every RV we've ever had. All right, we've taken out RV loans. I mean, we've also put up to 50% down on RVs that we've bought. But we've basically stayed within our budget.
Well, we've never really had any super expensive RV. You know, we've always stayed in that sort of
30.
Right, that 30 and under category. And I think because of that, the RV doesn't feel like it controls us. And, you know, everybody's budget's different. So if you can comfortably spend $70,000, if you can comfortably spend $200,000, awesome. It's just personally what I've seen so much is when people spend more than they're comfortable with, the RV becomes a stress point instead of a point of joy. And, you know, we just have seen people walk right up to the line. And I want to encourage you right now to know that people can have a fun, wonderful time in an RV that costs $5,000, you know, or $10,000 or $20,000. Really, we're all at the campground having an amazing time no matter how much we spent on our RV.
I've said it before, and I'll say it again. I mean, the family in the $500,000 motorhome is not having more fun than the family in the $500 used pop-up camper off of Craigslist. They're more comfortable.
Yeah.
Okay. I'll grant them that. Yeah, yeah. But I, in my heart of hearts, I just don't believe that they're having more fun.
Can we talk about one more thing with budget? Is really take into consideration your operating budget, right? And your maintenance budget when you're thinking about that. Realize that a towable is going to cost you a lot less to maintain over the year than a motorized unit. And do you have the money, right, to pay for the extra insurance for the motorized, to pay for the extra maintenance on that? And make sure that that plays into your decision-making process. Do you have the room to store it, right? And if it's going to cost you money to store it, maybe your budget needs to come down a little, right? Just be honest about all of those money things, and that's going to reward you in the future when you have the money to go camp.
And I just think that we love to really be honest with our audience and give the best possible advice. Depreciation's a real thing with RVs, and you not only need to think about, you know, what is your budget for this purchase, but when you go to trade it in, depreciation is going to be a real thing you're going to be dealing with. So start thinking about that next purchase as well, and just don't borrow too much money.
Right.
You could end up in trouble.
All right. Now, number two, our second question is a little bit related to the first question with price. It's taking it to the next level, right? So question number two that you'll want to ask is, what is your current tow vehicle situation?
Or is there no tow vehicle situation?
Right. And that makes things actually really important to consider, right? So in the typical travel trailer world, you're going to need either an SUV or a truck. If you're looking in the SUV world, you may be able to tow like between 3,000 and 5,000 pounds with the typical, say, Explorer or something like that.
Or a Subaru Ascent, as we discovered.
Right. And we've done a lot of content in the past on towing with SUVs, towing with trucks. So make sure you dive into all of that if you're still kind of not sure about your tow vehicle situation. So the question is do you have right now a vehicle in your driveway that you can tow with? Because if you do, that needs to factor into your budgeting.
We think if you've already got the pickup truck or you already have the capable SUV, and please don't engage in wishful thinking, people. Okay? Please don't
magical thinking
about what your SUV can tow. You need,
because someone on a Facebook group told you it could. Or the RV salesman.
The research is frustrating. Matching trucks to trailers is not easy, but the resources are out there, okay? And also, the RV Atlas group is a great place to ask questions. We have a lot of friendly people that'll help you. But that being said, if you look out in the driveway and there's a capable SUV or a pickup truck, the advice we give people is don't look at a motorhome.
Right.
Because you've already spent a significant chunk
the
of the money.
Expensive part, yeah.
You've already paid most of the money you need to pay to be an RVer.
You have the engine.
The truck is more than the trailer in almost any circumstance. My goodness, our current truck was $20,000 more than the, not 20, but almost $20,000 more than the trailer.
Yeah.
So if you've got the truck already, get a towable. You know, get a towable.
Well,
I think
just keeps your budget definitely in check along the way.
Well, if you've got crazy money.
Yeah, no, look, if you've got stupid money, congratulations. I'm really happy for you. I love it. And just go out and spend that stupid money wherever you want. Go good. But we don't have stupid money.
Our problem is, well, I think we have stupid money. And Stephanie's like, wait a second, that's not stupid money.
I say daddy has a money tree in the basement. Daddy has a money tree somewhere that I don't know about.
And he doesn't water it enough.
He's going to start watering that money tree.
But I think it's pretty good advice. Like, it, you know, a lot of people have that pickup truck because of work or a job or whatever it might be.
Or if you have a family of five, you might already have a good size SUV. And I really recommend, for especially for your first time RV purchase, staying within the tow capacity of whatever you have. That way, it's not putting so much skin in the game. You learn so much of that first RV experience, right? You might flip it in a year. Really, honestly, people, it happens more often. It's hard to know what's going to work for you.
Everybody swears it's not going to happen.
I know. But, you know, if you've got skin in the game already, try to keep with what you have. Now, the flip side of this is if you do not have a tow vehicle in the driveway, right? You're driving a Honda Accord and your partner's driving a Prius to work every day, okay? You've got these nice, maybe very, you know, good on gas cars, and you don't want to add a third vehicle to your fleet, or you don't want to trade your Prius for a big honking
or maybe you
truck.
Want kind of a large RV, but you really just don't have it. Like you said, you don't have the desired, not everybody wants a
big
pickup truck.
I don't want an F-350.
And let me just lay this down. Pickup trucks are just, generally speaking, such better tow vehicles than SUVs.
Yeah.
Okay, I'm not knocking the world of the SUV. SUVs can be properly equipped and can tow an RV quite nicely. But more often than not, for me, after 10 years of experience in this game, I look at pickup trucks as being the best options. But not everybody wants one.
Right.
And they're expensive.
And they're expensive.
Everyone, trucks are crazy. RVs
and if you have more than three kids, or if you have dogs and everything, it's very hard to fit everybody in a truck sometimes.
Some people, I mean, if you got four kids, how does a pickup truck work?
Yeah, well, sometimes they sit one in the front, but you do need the SUV sometimes, and that's fine.
So then we would be looking motorhome.
Right. I would definitely think about a motorhome, because you might say, well, we don't want to spend that much. But if you don't have the tow vehicle, by the time you buy the tow vehicle and the towable, right, together, that could cost the same amount as an affordable Class C.
Can I give everybody our math? I've
Go
done
ahead.
It before at RV shows. So our toy hauler, we paid about $27,000, right around there. And our F-250, we paid, I think, $42,000 to $44,000.
Yep, got that.
So can you add those two numbers together for me, since I'm not
I wasn't
at math?
Really listening to the first number.
69.
I was taking a sip of my tea.
I think it's fair to say it was about $69,000 combining truck and trailer. There are Class C's out there for that price point.
Do you regret that at the point when we had a truck paid off? Like, there was a point when we had our Silverado completely owned, free and clear, and we were upgrading from the White Hawk. We could have at that point decided to go motorized.
Oh my gosh, you're putting it in such stark terms.
Because there was that moment.
There is a huge part of me.
Do you wish we had gone motorized then?
I'm ambivalent. I mean, there's a huge part of me that wishes I could go back and have a motorhome. But here's what I think would happen, because the grass is always greener. If we had done that, I don't think we would have any justification to also have an expensive pickup truck. We'd probably have two small, affordable sedans.
We used to be driving around that Silverado.
I think I would completely miss having a pickup truck.
Yeah.
Because the problem is we've owned pickup trucks now for almost a decade.
Yeah.
Like, I love going to the recycling center in my pickup truck.
Mm-hmm.
I love helping friends move in my pickup truck. Like, I have a hard time imagining life without a pickup truck.
Yeah.
And we don't have the stupid money to have a motorhome and $40,000 pickup truck.
That's
a complicated question you're asking.
Yeah, it is.
And I think I need to talk to a psychologist about it.
Well, I don't regret that we stayed in the world of towable, because like I said at the beginning, and this might be different for somebody else, but I really love the fact that to me, we don't have too much money in the RV. It makes me feel like we can be more flexible, like we're not too invested in it. If our family changes, if our lifestyle changes, we could change our RV pretty easily. You know, like I don't
but
feel
it's
super
so
committed.
It's so bucket list for me to at some point have a motorhome.
Yeah, it is.
But let's be honest with our dear listeners.
It's not to me.
Stephanie and I have talked about this so much. We've also kind of realized that a motorhome at this point for us in our particular situation would be so much more expensive that we could just rent one every summer for a week and we would be spending less money than if we bought one.
Yeah. Cause
and every summer we could be in some different motorhome we rent for that nice week-long trip.
And that would be less than the amount that we would spend on payments or whatever throughout the course of the
That's
year.
That's thinking outside the box.
Yeah, well, it's how I've kept you at bay, because I'm just like, no, because we can rent a motorhome when we fly there or whatever. And everybody out there that's been listening for a while knows that renting RVs is a big part of our sort of travel plan. Like, we have an RV, but we also have no problem with renting an RV. And that's another reason why I like to stay super cheap, not super cheap, but affordable on the RV that's sitting in our driveway.
So we're just about ready to hit you with question number three. And I know this is like a lot of profound wisdom to deal with in one episode.
But we'll move on from the money, which will be a relief for some people.
Before we do that, we have a sponsored message from our friends at Yogi Bear's Jellystone Park Camp Resorts.
All right. If you have kids or grandkids, then a Yogi Bear Jellystone Park experience is really one that you don't want to miss out of. Even if you don't yet have an RV, if you're listening to this, we camp in cabins at Yogi Bear Jellystone Parks. We camp in tents there. It is a fun experience. I have a friend that goes twice a year for a week in tents with her and her sister and all of their kids, and they have the time of their life at Quarryvale in Pennsylvania. It's just a fantastic experience no matter how you're camping there.
I'm starting to think about what Jellystones we're going to visit next summer.
Right.
But we'll talk about that off air.
We will. We'll have the discussion. So from the amenities to the activities, right, it's like day camp fun no matter what time of year you go. There's something for every age level, which is really important for me. The little kids can do sand art or like paint little pottery, and like the bigger kids can be playing with laser tag.
Basketball, you know? Volleyball.
Yeah, exactly. So there's really something for every age range. But more specifically, I wanted to point out it's the beginning of September, and if you haven't ever done a Halloween weekend at a Jellystone, you need to try to squeeze one in this year. Don't wait till next year. We haven't been to a Halloween weekend, I think, in like 2 years, and we are chomping at the bit. It's been
for
too long.
For us, like, Halloween is a holiday we spend at the campground.
There's
like,
it's like nothing.
The home part of Halloween is not that interesting anymore.
The trick-or-treating at a campground is fantastic. It's so much fun. The kids will love it. Everybody decorates all of their RVs all around the park. There'll be like haunted hay wagon rides and pumpkin painting and carving, and it's just such a great way to celebrate the fall season. So go to jellystonepark.com and you can make a reservation at a Jellystone Park near you. And remember, it's not just a campground, it's a Jellystone Park.
And I think everybody, I just got to reiterate, campgrounds are packed. Like, you need to be thinking about your reservations for summer 2020 if you want to get good sights.
All right.
Question number three. Let me tell a little story. This question is like, you got to ask yourself, who will be traveling in the RV? Now, when we bought our second RV, we bought a quad bunkhouse, our Whitehawk 29 SQB. We had twin boys at that point, and I think it's fair to say we had no plans of having a third child.
Nope.
But I was like, I want a quad bunkhouse because we're going to take the cousins camping. Like, I don't want some single double over double bunkhouse. I need four bunk beds because the cousins are going to come camping all the time. Stephanie, how many times did we take the cousins camping?
Zilch.
Zero.
Yeah. That happens. It sounds like, oh my gosh, that's such a sad story. Well, actually, that happens all the time. In fact, I met some really fun RVFTA listeners last winter. I think it was in Kansas City at an RV show, and they were cracking me up with the stories about buying an RV specifically because their kids were like at the age their teenager wanted to bring like his girlfriend or something along. And so she was like, well, I can't have a pop-up. I need a travel trailer. So I have these separate sleeping areas and everything. She's like, I bought this RV and the kid never came camping with us. I was dying. Like, you just do that all the time. People say, or grandparents.
Grandparents do it a lot.
They say, I'm going to bring the kid, the grandkids. And sometimes it just doesn't work out that way.
But here's the thing. It's not a sad thought. Because, I mean, the reality is you'll bring them less. But say you do end up bringing them a lot. They can sleep on the fold-down dinette.
Exactly.
People that aren't part of your regular traveling crew can sleep on the floor.
Yeah, and they can sleep in a tent outside. Kids love doing that. So that's the important part, is to say, who will be with us all the time?
I would totally base my purchase on that exact thought. Who is in your traveling group every single time?
Including pets, right? So if you are traveling with dogs when you're shopping, you need to think, how will the pets work with this? So that's important to think about towable and motorhome, because some people that have a towable, if they're going to have a truck and they have three kids and two dogs, they're like, wait a minute, where is everybody going to go?
Once you have more than two kids, it gets complicated. I'm sorry. We've never found the magical solution for dealing with RV purchases for people with like more than two kids.
Yeah, that's what you need to go to a psychologist to deal with. Is
I love having three kids, but it has been like,
it makes everything a little bit trickier.
Question number four. You need to ask yourself, are you a road tripper, a destination traveler, or a seasonal camper. Now, let me actually break these terms down. When we say road tripper, like, are you the type of person or family that likes to travel to a lot of different stops? Like on your summer vacation, you might go to 3 campgrounds in a row, right? Which has kind of always been our style, like 4 days here, 4 days here, 4 days here. Or are you a destination traveler where you've got that campground you love and in the summer you just go and you plop down and you're spending a week to 10 days there and you're not going anywhere else, right? Mm-hmm. Or are you a seasonal camper, meaning you're renting one site for the year and setting your RV up kind of semi-permanently on that site? These are important questions to ask yourself because based on which one you are, it could really affect your RV purchase.
Right. So the most important thing to realize here is that if you're a road tripper, you need to pay attention to the kind of RV that's going to be easiest to set up and break down because that's the pain point with road tripping. We bought a pop-up camper first and we were doing all of these stop after stop for every 2 nights, 3 nights. And it became such a strain to set up the pop-up and break it down over and over again on a trip. In fact, we ended up like being ridiculous. Like we wouldn't even make a stop that we wanted to make because we didn't want
to
set up and break
down. If we had to
break
down the pop-up camper and then go to another campground, it was like a full day of work.
Oh gosh, it was so much work. So for us, we needed to focus on ease of setup and break down.
Now, if we had been destination travelers who just went to the Cape Hatteras KOA every summer for 10 days, who cares? The pop-up would have been great.
True. And a pop-up is fantastic for that kind of thing. I'll never forget our friends that bought like a 1982 Jayco pop-up from this guy. It was in pristine condition. He said every single year they brought that down to Cape May for his 1 week vacation. They set it up at a campground down in Cape May, had a great beach vacation, broke it down and brought it home. That's what they did with it for like 20 years.
Now, you might also want to think about the size of the RV you're going to buy. If you're a road tripper and you really like to go to a lot of different campgrounds and make a lot of different stops, we might recommend not getting something too big because you're going to be maneuvering in and out of a wide variety of campgrounds. Now, if you're a destination traveler and you know you're going to this like RV resort every summer, you've got your favorite site that you rebook time and time again.
They have pull-throughs.
They've got pull-throughs.
No then, problem.
Okay, you know what? Go buy the 40-foot fifth wheel. It might really make a lot of sense. But if you're going to go to a lot of different locations, you might want to keep it a little bit smaller.
And then let's just say on the flip side, a lot of people consider Class C's, Class A's fantastic options for like those big cross-country adventures. You know, like our wonderful guest correspondent, Shelley Bailey Shaw from KidTripster.com. They have a Class A. They do these like ridiculously enormous
like 20 places.
Adventures all over the country. And for her, traveling with her sons and sometimes grandparents along.
And her son's friends.
Just the crew. It's so important for her to have that Class A.
And they don't tow a car though, do they?
Well, so they have not in the past. And I keep saying we have to have her on the show to talk specifically about strategies for not having a tow.
Then a motorhome all of a sudden isn't quite as big to deal
with. Right. But they did just add their Jeep on this past year, but I haven't heard a report back on how it went.
We're going to have to get her back. Shelly, if you're listening, give us a ring.
Give us a ring, Shelly. We got to talk about these things.
If you're a seasonal camper and you just are going to, you know, buy an RV and park it at one campground year round, get as big of an RV as you can get on the site, right?
Oh, yeah. And you want to think about things then. It has nothing to do with moving or setting up or breaking down.
Get the sliding glass doors and then build a deck.
I always joked, we bought our toy hauler not in a million years thinking we were going to be a seasonal camper. And then we just, on the spur of a moment, ended up with a seasonal the next year. I said, this is the most ridiculous seasonal camper ever.
That's funny, though. You felt it was a ridiculous camper to have for a seasonal.
It was like a toy hauler.
Because you're like, oh, I get
it's
a fifth
up
wheel.
All the time.
Get a fifth wheel with more comfort. On the other hand, I saw some real advantages to having a toy hauler on a seasonal site because when the winter months came, we could just pack everything up in the back of the toy hauler.
Yeah, but I don't like oh, it's got a garage for all the stuff in the winter.
That's not exciting. We've got storage.
And think about if you're thinking of a motorhome and you want to do seasonal camping, remember that a motorhome does need to be driven and run. That is part of keeping it in tip-top condition, ironically. Like letting it sit and not being driven around is actually actually not good for a motorhome.
Generally speaking, and I am generalizing, you don't see a ton of motorhomes on seasonal sites.
People it is do more it, of, but you got to bring it out. Maybe sometimes people do it when they're like snowbirds, right? So they yeah. are driving it back and right. forth, maybe to a snowbird location or something
like a good life to me.
That, but yeah, but just think about that ahead of time.
Can you and I cut a deal right now? Winters in South Carolina, summers in New England.
As soon as the boys are flying from the nest, I will be spending my winters in a warmer location. 100%. I'm not a winter person. I can't do it.
We all don't like the winter. And in our family.
It's true. The boys don't even.
I hate to be negative on the podcast. When it comes to winter, we are just like all
totally negative. I tried for years to get positive.
If anyone else feels that
it.
Way, send us an email. Let us know we're not alone.
I was like, I'm going to embrace the season and really enjoy it.
I know we do the Winterization Blues episodes. We work so hard hating winter.
But we still hate it. That's right, okay.
Last question. And this, for the first time buyer, I don't think a lot of people ask themselves this question. And I think it's absolutely pivotal that you do. So are you the type of person that prefers private campgrounds, meaning like family owned or KOA or Jellystone? Or are you the type of person that really likes to camp at like state and national park campgrounds? Because there really are some people that do all of one and all of the other. And another thing that complicates our RV lives is that we do both. But yeah. a lot of people do just do all public or all private. Stephanie, why does it matter so much when you're RV shopping?
So the rule of thumb is that if you really want to enjoy more rustic public campgrounds, like state and national parks, then you need to stay 30 feet and under. That's the general rule. Some newer state parks and national parks are going to accommodate larger rigs. But for the most part, if you definitely want to be able to get a site, you need to stay under 30 feet. And right now, the RV industry is making RVs bigger and bigger and bigger. Okay.
And it seems like there might be that counter trend where they might start going smaller.
Well, there's tons of small options.
But the last decade, it's been
big.
But
people at RV shows, I think, to be honest with you, people that haven't owned RVs in the past, at RV shows, you lose a sense of proportion. The RV doesn't look so big. You're in this huge conference center thing. The RV is all set up.
You didn't have to park it and drive it.
Right. You didn't get it there. It's all these other big RVs that are around it. You lose a sense of proportion and it doesn't look so big. And then you actually get it out there and you're on the road and you're headed to the campground and you're like, I can't fit in any of these campsites.
Some people kind of poo-poo this 30-foot kind of thinking that we really believe in after 10 years of RVing. I'm going to defend us on that because, like, let me put it this way. If I have a 30-foot RV and you have a 32-foot RV, I can camp in more sites than you can. It's just true. I mean, if you then have a 36-foot RV and I still have my 30-foot RV, there's even more sites that I can get into that you can't get into. A lot of state and national park campgrounds might have a handful of sites for that larger rig, but the vast majority of them are not going to be built. And we saw that in Glacier this summer. We went into a lot of the national park campgrounds and the sites were small.
Yeah. Now, if you will tend to stay in private campgrounds with full hookups and pull through sites, then the reality is you can go as big as you want. You can get that 40-foot towable or motorhome. They're making them that big. And if you want to get that in and out of gas stations along the way, and
half the time you're going to have a guy in a golf cart that's going to help guide you into your site.
Yeah, you're going to be absolutely fine with that big RV. But you really need to know what you're getting into ahead of time. Don't get the big RV. And I really think that even includes 33, 34 feet. Like we are at with our toy hauler, we actually felt like we got a little too big for our own comfort with being able to get into as many campsites as we wanted to.
The example we give is that we have a county park nearby that we love. I think it's got about 50 sites. When we had our 32-foot Whitehawk, we could fit into about a dozen of those sites. Our 34-foot toy hauler can fit comfortably into about three of them.
Yeah,
and it doesn't seem like a big difference. It's a couple of feet, but it's a big difference. So look, we're going to come back with another mini episode next week on narrowing down and choosing a great floor plan for your family. After that, we're going to do a short episode about the purchase process. We're going to give you every bit of information we have about really doing the best you can price-wise and making smart decisions and why sometimes it might be smart to pay a little more, actually. It's not just about saving money. And then after that, we're going to do a mini episode on picking up the RV and doing the walkthrough on that day that it becomes your baby and you're going to bring it home.
Now, I want to mention to any of you listeners out there who felt that they still were a little unsure even of some of the terms that we were talking about, right? Like I was saying, oh, a Class A or a Class C motorhome or a travel trailer. If you're still in that initial research period and you're not even quite like confident in understanding the differences between towables and motorized, I'm going to link over at rvfta.com in the show notes to this episode. I'm going to link to a previous podcast that we did, which RV is right for me. And in that podcast, we actually went through pop-up camper, travel trailer, fifth wheel, and we said what all of them were and we said some of the pros and cons. So if you really want a rundown of the different classes, quote unquote, of RVs.
It's really one of our most popular seminars
yes,
too, at the RV
people
shows.
Really like it. It helps the newbies feel a little more confident with the lingo.
Hey, we'll
so.
Post our RV show schedule as soon as we can because we
yeah,
are starting
I mean,
to
we
get
have
all that
it.
Settled. Yeah.
I don't know if it's public. Yeah, I don't
well,
know if it's postable,
ask.
But
if
we can
postable,
ask.
If it's postable, we'll start letting everybody know. It's really fun meeting all of our listeners at RV
and
shows.
And we've got new locations this
yeah,
year.
And, yeah, almost all new locations. Mm-hmm. So it's so nice after giving a seminar for somebody to come up that's a podcast listener and to say hello. We really enjoy it. So we hope
all
to
right.
see all of you at the campground.
See you at the campground. Thanks, everyone, for listening to this episode of the RV Atlas.
You can also find links to everything mentioned in this episode over at rvfta.com, plus hundreds of blog posts on everything from gear recommendations to our favorite camping recipes.
If you enjoy our show, please leave us a review wherever you listen, and make sure to get social with us on Facebook at the RV Atlas and on Instagram at Jeremy and Stephanie. Plus, we've got the friendliest campers around in our private Facebook group, so check it out.
Until next time, I'm Jeremy.
And I'm Stephanie.
And we'll see you at the campground.
See you at the campground.